Time to get our midweek off and rolling with a guy who's been on many topics the past week. Find his work for USA Today online, usatoday.com, or your local newsstand. Become a follower on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. George, a fine Wednesday to you. How's it going?
It's good, man. I hope you're doing well. Life is good.
Good. I'm very happy to hear that. I'm an all-encompassing college football fan, and I read your article about Oklahoma State. I just like that program. They're always entertaining. I like Gundy. They had a really good year last year, ended up crushing Colorado for openers. So they ended ranked 11th. They've got that dynamic duo, quarterback, wide receiver back. And I know we call them the way too early rankings, have them top 15, top 10. So I would imagine there's probably a lot of optimism around that program right now.
Well, there really is. Now, listen, I want to temper this by saying there's not a team in the country right now that at least externally doesn't think they're going to go 12-0, 13-0, 14-0, 15-0 next year, right? I mean, that's what the spring is all about. But there's reason for it at Oklahoma State. I mean, you bring back Mason Rudolph, who's probably as good a quarterback as most college football fans haven't paid a lot of attention to. He's overshadowed in his own league by a couple of guys in his own state by Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma. But he's really good. He's a senior, decided to come back, could have come out early and would have probably been a, you know, second or third round draft pick. His measurables would have really enticed the pro scout. 6'5", 230 pounds with a big arm, you know, just looks like your prototypical pro quarterback. And then they've got a bevy of big time receivers starting with James Washington. You know, they always seem to have one great receiver and a bunch of good ones, and that's what it seems like they have. And then they've got a run game, too, I think they think, at least with Justice Hill, who'll be a sophomore, which has been something they've been lacking the last few years. What I don't know about Oklahoma State is essentially what you never know about Oklahoma State, and that's how good the defense is going to be.
Right.
And I think if we get to that time of year here in a couple months when everybody's saying, making their preseason picks for conferences, you're going to see a whole lot of people pick Oklahoma because they've got several questions, you know, at running back and wide receiver, but they bring back Mayfield, got a big time offensive line, and you feel like their defense is going to be better. That said, no one should be surprised if, as it turns out, Oklahoma State ends up being really good.
I agree. Rudolph last year, 28 TDs, 4 interceptions, 4,000 yards, and almost quietly. We're talking with George Schroeder, USA Today. I know, as somebody who's seen many, many games, many, many sports, and been a part of a lot of post-game interviews, coaches and players, it seems to me that if there is a game that is officiated, a big game, where it's obvious something went off the rails, there's no chance for the media to confront or have a conversation with a referee, an umpire, or an official. Do you think that would be something worth looking into? Because you know what happens. The next day, the league or the conference comes out and say they blew it, but it doesn't do anybody any good. You think that would be something that would be worthwhile as a journalist?
Well, sure, I do, but I'm a journalist. I mean, do the league think that? I don't think they do, and I think part of the reason is one of the words that you used to describe the encounter a minute ago was confront.
Yeah.
They want their umpires or their referees or their officials confronted by people. Now, you know, that was just one of the several words you used. I do think that more transparency is generally a good thing. I also think that in the world that we live in now, where there's so many angles of video angles of everything, that probably there are calls that are now being seen that weren't ever seen before, and we are much more hypercritical because of that, of officiating than we ever were before. So I think it's a different game, a tougher skill for those guys than it ever was before, because not saying guys used to miss more calls and get away with it, that's not exactly what I'm saying, but what I'm saying is we see every single nuance of every single missed call now. And I don't know that we ever did before. So would I like to see more of an opportunity? Perhaps, say, for example, the NCAA could expand the reasons by which your pool reporter can talk to a guy, or the reasons for which, because it's a pretty, I don't have it in front of me, but it's a pretty tight, narrow set of parameters. at which point that they'll make an official available to a pool reporter. I mean, there's a designated pool reporter for most of these, for almost all these games, football and basketball at the college level, and most of these others too. But it's a pretty tight parameter as to what topics will actually be allowed to say, yep, you're right, that calls for the pool reporter to go in and talk with them. It'd be nice to expand or loosen those parameters some, I think. But I don't know that making the officials available since, you know, on a, you know, a regular basis to just sort of the media at large is an answer to anything.
All right. No, I did not know some of those things about pool reporters. Good info. So the powers that be in the NCAA met last week. They made some big announcements regarding recruiting. And it starts with something that seems to have been in the wind for a lot of years, this early signing period. So assuming they get the final green light over the summer, like, what are the key facts? Like, when will it be, and how would this impact like when potential recruits can make campus visits?
Well, it you know, and you're right, it's a couple of rubber stamps that need to be done. First, the NCAA Board of Directors later this month, and then in June, the Collegiate Commissioners Association, which is exactly what it sounds like, conference commissioners, who actually administer the National Letter of Intent program, they'll have to actually agree to have that December signing date. But what the NCAA did was they allowed for it, and so it's going to happen. And so that'll change the game. You're still going to have that first Wednesday in February signing date, but you're going to have an awful lot of people will have signed in whatever date they settle on in mid-December. And then the second part of your question is, you know, obviously now you're going to have juniors who, until now, they couldn't make official visits, which means a visit's paid for by the school. Each recruit can take five. To different schools, five different schools want them.
Right.
You couldn't take them until, you know, later than this, but now you can take them beginning in April of your junior year. And from April to June, there'll be an opportunity to take, you know, mid-June or late June, there'll be an opportunity to take official visits, which makes a ton of sense to go along with an earlier signing date, quite frankly. But it'll be really good for schools that are a long way from sort of the fertile recruiting grounds. In Oregon or in Oregon State, quite frankly, because what you see is you see an awful lot of people making an awful lot of official visits during those times when it's an easy drive. But, you know, Oregon and Oregon State, for example, or Nebraska or other schools like that, they get recruits from a long way away, by and large. And I think it's going to really help them to be able to get kids on campus during the time frame when they're not committed yet, when they're still considering all their options, school's still in session, and I think it'll be really helpful for those guys. But making that an earlier time to have official visits is, you know, coincides with the opportunity to sort of move up the calendar on the signing day, too. I think it's two common sense additions to the recruiting model.
Now, as we continue with George Schroeder of USA Today, I'll be honest, I didn't know much about this over-signing. So apparently now there's a new rule implemented. And like you just said, it seems like a lot of people that you quoted, they're talking about a lot of this stuff being transformational. But what did they do in particular with this over-signing thing?
Well, I mean, you've seen over the years some programs, you know, you're only supposed to be allowed to bring in 25 new guys per year. And there's some technical details there that change the game. Like if a guy signed in, you know, if someone enrolled early in January or whatever, then they may count back to the previous year or this, that, or the other. But in general, you're allowed to sign 25 people a year. But what some schools were doing was signing 29 and 36 or whatever, not usually 36, and then figuring either some of them weren't going to qualify and the numbers would work themselves out, or what you saw in some of the bigger programs was, and Alabama has done this several times over the years, they would then come back when, let's say, all 29 that they signed qualified academically, they would then come back and ask four guys to great shirt and just say, hey, you know, we told you we had a scholarship for you when you signed the National Letter of Intent to come to our school, but it turns out we don't. So what we'd like you to do is lay out a year and then come in next year or come in January or whatever. And so they're essentially ending that practice. I think that's a good thing. Oversigning is a bad deal. And when you oversign 29, that's four guys who could have gone somewhere else. You know, so
no,
I think it's a good, you know, look, there's a whole lot more to it than that, but that's sort of the basic piece of it.
No, I get you. And it was something that I was really not familiar with. So that offers clarity, which, as you well know, I need at times. and finally, what I'm going to call the Harbaugh rule, those satellite camps where it seemed Michigan was willing to go anywhere just to antagonize Notre Dame and Ohio State. So
SEC school. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, true. So what do the rules now say, assuming everything gets stamped with the proper approval over the summer? What do the rules now say about these camps?
Well, essentially, you can only hold camps on your own campus or on facilities that you regularly practice or play at. So, you know, for most schools, that means you can only hold summer camps on your own campus. So it essentially ends the practice of satellite camps. It's just, you know, the way it's going to be. What's interesting is it was such a controversy the last 2 years. You know, even this time last year, they briefly passed a rule banning it, and it got overturned or sent back, and they were able to keep doing it last year. But with everything else in this giant recruiting reform package, the satellite camp piece of it, that they all passed them all together, all these different rules in one big package, the satellite camp piece of it barely got any mention at all. It was like it wasn't controversial at all to ban it this time around, whereas last year it was hugely controversial when they tried to do it. It was just kind of interesting that other things sort of took precedence.
All right. Well, I appreciate your flexibility. As always, great to get our Wednesday off and rolling. You enjoy the rest of your week and weekend, and we'll see what lies ahead for next week. Thanks a lot, George.
All right. Hey, thank you.
All right. Take it easy. George Schroeder, USA Today. Yeah, if you go online and you find out he was covering those meetings and all the stuff that had to do with recruiting and this oversigning and these satellite camps, it's a lot of information, but it seems to be, in particular, for an organization like the NCAA that could be a little stodgy or the type of organization that moves at like a glacier's pace. I don't know. I found all of it kind of encouraging. And as one of the, I think it was Bob Bowlesby, said, transformational. So check it out. There's a lot of good information there. And if you're a college football fan, college basketball fan, a lot of this would be of interest to you. All right. Before we break, shout out to my friends at Small World Auto. Small in title only when it comes to all the great stuff they do as a family-owned automotive service center with their state-of-the-art service bay repair shops. They are big, huge, conveniently located 2090 West 11th in Eugene. Their phone number is 683-6475, be it domestic or import. If your car needs service, call Marty and his A-plus staff. They'll take care of you. They've got a great reputation for integrity and the caliber of the work they do. Check them out online. Really well put together, informative website, smallworldauto.com. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, it's time to honor the bell. Alex will rev it up with a crunch exchange to wrap crunch time. 95.3 The Score.
Clap, 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 clap.